Blog Talk Radio.
You may think that it's over, that your life is done.
The man is dead. Come.
Don't sweat the challenge. Your battle's already won. Listen, y'all. See, God writes the end before the story begins. He told me to tell you the best. The author of your faith, he wrote a provision for you to win. You're a winner, you're a winner, you're a winner.
You ain't seen your best days yet.
I don't care what people told you, you ain't seen
no best.
Talking Real to You, hosted by Dr. Larissa D. Smith. And I'm so excited to be here with you on Monday. This is Marvelous Monday. We have an opportunity to have a super weekend, a great weekend, a truly blessed weekend. And you are the start of a work week, which is Monday in most cases. And we're excited to come to you this every other Monday. And the call-in number is 347-857-4192. And if you want to connect with us through the web link, you can go to www.blogtalkradio.com/LD Smith Production. One of the key points about this show is the only father and daughter Blog Talk Radio team in the country. And we're just going to bring to you just plain old life issues. So we're very excited about having an opportunity to do that through this vehicle. Now, my co-host, and which is, makes up the team, is still kind of under the weather. I mentioned last week she had surgery on last Wednesday, and now she's going through her rehab. Matter of fact, I went with her today at 1 o'clock, and she had some challenges today trying to get that knee back to par. So she won't be here with us tonight because once she takes the narcotic, most of the time she says knocks her out. But she always says, you know, wish the show well and truly say, you know, have an awesome show. And to everybody, she always tries to remind us, keep on grinding through the hashtag and also the Smith Way. So, Lauren, we look to see you back with us in a couple weeks. But however, get well now. Our prayers is for you to be well. All right, let's get our show started. Our show name tonight and our title is Let's Talk Real Life Issues. And I have two outstanding experts that's going to be joining me again tonight. And I look forward to these two young ladies joining me because I'm so excited about having this team put together because we're bringing you some just plain old life issues. And these two individuals will be bringing it at you. First, I'm going to start off with introducing our first expert. She hails from the state of South Carolina. And I always appreciate her joining us and giving her expertise. And her name is Ms. Scarlett H. Black. How are you doing, Ms. Black?
Good evening, Dr. Smith. Doing well. And I hope that Coach Lauren continues to improve.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And it's always good to have you here because you're with us in all our other shows as well. We appreciate you joining us. We're so excited to have you a part of this team because she joined us 2 weeks ago, and it was just exciting to have her here. Also, the other expert hails from the state of Georgia, by way of Alabama, none other than Dr. Olivia E. Smith. How you doing, Doc?
Doing well. Thank you. Thank you. Hi, Ms. Black.
Hey, Dr. Smith, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
And you could have a better team. And how you doing, Doc, as well? You know, we could have a better team of individuals who really have some expertise. They're going to share their thoughts. And, you know, you can join us. Just call in 347-857-4192. And we want you to press 1. Once you press 1, I'll see that question mark come up, and I'll identify you the last 4 digits of your cell or telephone number. Then I ask you to join the conversation by telling us what your name is or who you are and where you're from. Tonight, again, we have some exciting topics we're going to talk about tonight. And we want to first start off again mentioning our title. Our title is Let's Talk Real Life Issues. We're going to talk some issues. Now, last week, 2 weeks ago, our show was more in line, maybe 3 now, but it was the last show that we had. We talked about violence in the community. And we really didn't get really down dirty with it. We kind of was we're looking at certain topics and certain things that are going on in the community. So I said, let's come back. Let's talk about it a little bit more, and we can share some stuff. And the topic is more or less a question is, how do we stop the violence in our community? And if you can specifically look at gun violence and physical violence, and I can give you a list of things that occurred that I know just recently that has created problems. We mentioned the first is a high school game where there was gunshots fired out, had people stampeding and running. Also, at another activity, high school game, there was an altercation between the head coach and one of the administrators that led to the head coach being suspended in the local area in Alabama. Then we also had two Florida Atlantic University football players shot this past weekend by Friday night on a drive-by. Then we looked at the issue that happened over in Auburn, Alabama, recently at a game between Auburn University and Alabama State University. Actually, the game was over at 1:30 in the morning. Young man was shot and killed over at McDonald's. And then we had the other issues that occurred, and we go to a list all over this country. Things are happening, but we're going to relate to certain ones, and we're going to see how in our community, while a lot of time it's black-on-black crime, but it's not all the time, but we're always identified with it. And we just want to look at it and share our thoughts about it. And you, team, you can jump in it where you feel like. If you feel comfortable, let's jump in it right now and share your thoughts about how we're going to deal with our violence in our community.
Well, I think that we talked about it on the last show, and we'll expound on it some more. But, again, as I mentioned, then, we're going to have to take matters in our own hands and quit waiting for people. I think Smith called it someone coming in on the white horse trying to save us. We have to save us. And in addition to that, we're going to have to really not taking away anyone's Second Amendment rights, but we're going to have to address the gun issue in this country. We kill more people in America than some of these other countries around the globe, and it's sad. We're going to have to confront this NRA. We're going to have to get them in the pocketbook where it hurts. We've got to have sensible gun laws. You know, if you want to hunt or whatever, you need an assault rifle to do that. I don't think so. And that's just my opinion. I think the students at Parkland down in Florida have really shown us some different ways and some exciting ways that we can address and take on the gun lobbyists in this country. But until we address this in sensible gun laws, I think we're going to continue to have this problem. In addition, we have to value each other. We have to value life. And it's not a TV show, it's not reality TV, it's not a fake news or alternate universe. You shoot someone now, you're not going to get back up. Most times, you're dead. And this is something that we got to start imparting and instilling in children at a very young age. This stuff is real. In some of our urban cities, where it really is a tremendous problem, we've got to get back to the value of life. And I said a couple of weeks ago that even just going in your own neighborhoods, one block at a time, neighbor to neighbor, and start organizing and trying to bring awareness to this issue as well as resolution.
Awesome.
I agree what you're saying there because we have to plan a strategy. And it appears that somehow on a national level, we did not go back and come up with a resolution on this gun violence issue. And I guess NRA continued to do business as business because on a national level, we did not verbally and policy-wise take a stand. And so as we continue, you know, as we continue to ignore it, the problem continues to grow. And with the economy as it is, other issues and pressures of life, I think that we as Americans are getting it in our head that we can just go and shoot somebody else because I'm hurting. I'm hurting, I don't want you to have this or what have you, and I'll just shoot and kill you. It's our lives have been minimized. And so I think the violence is at a critical area in the United States.
And I agree, and I think that some people just, there's no other way out. We don't talk to each other. We can't reason and sit down and reason together. If there is an issue, the first thing we want to do is hurt. Hurt people, hurt other people. And until we get down to, like you said, the economy, folks not having decent jobs, living wages, and really let it, you know, this trickle-down economics, you know, I don't know who all is getting rich, but I'm not seeing it reach a lot of us. And a lot of us in our communities, and this goes on all economic strata and across racial land. The 1% at the top, but corporations are going to have to step up and going to have to help address some of these issues. And the only thing I see them doing is really pouring money that should be coming down to increase wages and do really good with people and have more than just trying to make minimum wage, they're pouring it back into their stocks for their investors and stockholders. It's not reaching the average worker. And, you know, when people feel there's no way out, you strike out, you are angry, just constantly angry, and just see no way clear to do anything else but if someone says the wrong thing, pull out a gun, shoot.
Yeah, I think it's very complex. It's just a complex issue. But we have to look at it, and I don't just blame, you know, our policy and lawmakers totally for all of what's going on, but we have to, I mean, there's a major issue in our country, and somebody has to take a look at it. It comes out in the schools when there's an incident in the school. Something major has usually happened. And with Florida, the Florida students took it upon themselves to move. And because they moved on what they needed to, it overshadowed that policy that was coming from the national level to protect our children in the school system.
So my question would be is, you know, we're trying to think of some solutions and some things that we need to address. And just take, for example, one solution, at least trying to make something happen, is with the student down in Parkland. They made an effort. They all, not only they beat the drum in Florida, they took it all the way to the White House, and their families were supporting them as they went to that level, and also stopped at certain stops, because I know they had a stop here in Montgomery, Alabama. They stopped at the Capitol. So my question is they're making the stance. Is it time for individuals in our communities, in our neighborhood, to get together and make a stand? Or not always just marching and protesting, but making a stand with many ways. And I don't know how we can address those. Our education system are hurting so. That's something we're going to talk about in a little while. You know, we're economically suffering to the highest level, that we're not able to feed our families in a lot of cases. How do we in our community, we know stepping out and talking, but what else can we do in our communities? And that's something we want to look at. We want to provide you a solution, and you can be a part of this. Call in 347-857-4192, press 1, and I identify the last four digits of your cell or telephone number, then I ask you to jump in the conversation with your expertise. Just how can we do it at our communities, in our neighborhood? It was stated by Ms. Black, said that we need to do it one person at a time. How can we do it? Give me your thoughts on that in regards to just in our neighborhood. Take your own neighborhood. How can you do it in your neighborhood?
One thing that I've been really impressed with to the Parkland students were the mothers who across the country who have lost children to gun violence, and how in certain cities and certain neighborhoods they have really come together and formed their own groups to address the issue and to bring awareness to it and to reach out to those in their neighborhoods in their blocks throughout to try to come together and try to resolve, have resolution to putting your guns down and trying to come together as a group. And they have sort of really gone across the country with this. I know Trayvon Martin's mother was part of that group along with many others. But they have done that, and this is just a first step, too, of helping yourself. I mean, helping ourselves to resolve some of these issues, because at the federal level, state level, local levels, that's not some of the top priorities at times until there's a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. That's when we start talking again. And then it dies down when something else major happens, it seems to numb the topic or the issue at hand.
Exactly.
It's an illusion. And I just think, too, for us, as a people, African Americans, I'm speaking, and really it shouldn't be a color issue, but what our churches have been the biggest spotlight in the community to have a platform through the years, have had a platform on these type issues. And I just think somehow we have to go back to the churches, the community centers in our area, youth groups, youth pastors, we just have to go back and see where can we incorporate, you know, building services, building a platform for that, any opportunities for action, where can we go to set that up? And I'm sure churches are willing, more than willing, to do that. And then, as you said, we have to go on a lower level, which means a more of a community-based level, to do this.
And back during the day, you know, when we all lived in segregated neighborhoods, and, you know, you had all your role models, your coaches and your teachers and your ministers and all these, we all lived to, you know, in the same neighborhood together, and everyone knew each other. Well, that's not too much the case anymore, because, you know, it's a diverse, integrated society, and we can, you know, pretty much live anywhere where you want to, and so you've lost those core units right there in the neighborhoods. So you have to kind of like recreate that type of village. That type of core community groups to come in and do that. But often, you know, we talk a good game, but it just doesn't translate or transpire in many cases.
Yes, I agree. It does not, because I don't know. I think I really think it's a bit overwhelming. When you look at it and when you look at the bigger picture, because it affects our community, the health care costs increase, because many of these young people who may get shot or whatever, injured, they don't have insurance. And so we're putting in our time and energy, I guess, unless you're in medical school and you enjoy seeing them come along. We're seeing them having to require major health care. And so, therefore, the cost goes up for all of us. It reduces productivity. Our properties decrease in values. And it's just disrupting. It disrupts our communities.
So it is all these things.
You said what? Go ahead. You know, and we're to the point where now when we're talking about trying to do something in our community, because it is now community based, and we're gonna have to accept the reality. Dr. Smith, as well as Ms. Black, and said that, you know, the solution is that we have to start at home, in our homes. When I say community-based, I mean, you know, when it was segregated neighborhoods, you had everybody raising and help raising children. We don't have that so now. What we have now is everybody's individualized. We're so individualized that we don't even know who our neighbors are. We don't communicate with our neighbors. So what we do, we go into our house, close our doors, get up in the morning, go to work, come back, close our doors, you know, keep going on and on and on and on, but never communicating with one another. But as we have to kind of look at what brought us where we are now, we have to go back, say, 50 years ago, when everybody in the neighborhood would look out for one another. When you ask your housing 30, 50 years ago you could leave your door open without any problems, anybody going in your home. You can't do that. But that don't mean we can't still get together. We just got to find the right venue where we can get everybody together so we can make sure we are on the same page without someone getting upset because they're not in charge. That's another thing we got to look at. You know, our churches and various organizations, if I'm not in the lead way of it, then I'm not going to make the greatest effort to help. But we all are suffering, and no one is excluded from encountering violence, whether it's through physical violence or gun violence. I don't care how much money you have. I don't care what job you have, or what kind of suit you got on, what kind of dress, what kind of red bottoms, duty and birth, and whatever you got, you can encounter some type of violence. And we have to take it back to the home and start working and teaching our young people and teaching each other. I think that's what we do. We think of somebody said they're grown, they're able to handle what's going on in society. They're not able to handle it. They have to be taught as well as everybody else. You know, we have to go back to looking at training individuals to understand this is how you communicate with someone. You got to respect that other person. When you first respect yourself, then you can respect somebody else. And maybe that might help with lead to stopping a little bit of our violence in our community. We're not going to snap it all out in one day. But in time, if we continue to do and have a plan of starting at home first or in our neighborhoods first, we can, Tennessee, we do one neighborhood at a time. But if everybody doing it in their neighborhood and everybody doing it, eventually we can solve this problem or at least come close to making awareness more aware, and we'll be aware that if you take somebody's life, there's major consequences for it. But still, that life is lost. You know, my point is we just got to make sure we work hard. But we can look at that. Our call-in number is 347-857-4192. Make sure you give us a call if you want to share your thoughts on this topic, as well as the other topics we're gonna discuss. Just to kind of add a new wrinkle to what we're talking about, with all of this going on, are our communities beginning to fall into that level of being genocide? Our communities being destroyed completely? You know, individuals being removed from out of our, not our community, but within our culture? Are we in a period of genocide, being genocides?
In some areas of this country, it appears to be, it looks like that. The perception is that. But even in some of our most urban areas where it looks like genocide has been taking place, even there, in that distress and despair, people still want the best for their families and children. And again, you know, trying to reach out to try to find resolutions on how to make that happen. Some in our society, and I'm not going to call the names tonight, will want you to believe that because that takes the heat off of what needs to be done for the good of everyone in this country. They'll have you to believe that, you know, that that's all that it is. It's just killing each other. And they'd like to quote statistics and talk about how bad it is. But again, I go back to there is good everywhere, even exactly. In the most distressing, despairing-looking times. And everyone is not in agreement with gun violence or anything else or things that look terrible. We always want to paint the worst picture of our culture, our community, and our neighborhoods and our children, our educational system, things of this nature. And I just dare say that, yes, we have some problems and some issues, but in the midst of all of that, there are good people everywhere. And people want to do the best for their families and raise their children, have decent jobs, have a wonderful education opportunities for their kids, and things of that nature. And I just keep hanging on to that in spite of what it may be perceived.
Yes, and I agree with that. We do. We want the best. We want the best for ourselves, for our families, and people are striving to get that. It's when the funding and the resources does not get to certain communities, that we began to see the shifts in the communities and the changes in the people, the behavior change. And so it's been an issue for quite some time. When our communities were destroyed, you're able to see it a little bit more, especially as an adult, especially if you move around in your lifetime. You know, you see those neighborhoods. And I've gone to some and didn't know they existed. But it's there.
Exactly.
And I think people, like you said, that there's some good in all people. And I think people want to be appreciated. People want opportunities. And when there are no opportunities, we look for other opportunities.
Exactly.
To feed my house, take care of my house. I'm saying, you say?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Now,
you know, you're talking about making...
back during the day before the interstates, if you go to take Atlanta, take some of these other places, with school in Durham, and how they, well, this was by design, to tear up our communities.
Yes.
And we, you know, I don't know, maybe we should have spoken out more and maybe, you know, had more voice into that. But even down around Auburn Street, down in Atlanta, that, you know, the interstate coming through there is so many turns and so many this way to get to this part of 85, or this, that, and the other. And that was to tear up a thriving African-American black community, businesses, things that,
yes.
And the same thing happened in Durham. And we've just never really truly recovered from that. And the gerrymandering in our voting districts and things of this nature, all these things are by design. And now all these chickens are coming home to roost because our communities have been decimated in some of these areas, and now trying to get back to prosperity and to self-sufficiency and self-reliance, it's been hard for many in our communities to do so. But this is a historical backdrop to a lot of this stuff now.
Yeah, and it forced us to come out of our communities. And when you go back to the community where I grew up in, they did nothing, absolutely nothing in those areas except build a highway and left large parcels of land, unused land. It's just there.
Exactly.
In some places, grass growing up, buildings are old, dilapidated. But you touch nothing except you brought a highway in and you moved out these prominent business owners, funeral homes, places we knew, and people who knew us in the businesses. So all those things were taken away and it divided our communities. It really
and everything is by design.
Yes, it
and
really caused the divide.
By design.
Yes.
And as Dr. Smith has been black saying that, you know, when the interstate came, I know as well as Dr. Smith know that we had to move from where we was growing up to another area which was more integrated, where we was in a more that village-type neighborhood where the auntie, uncle, grandmother, great-grandmother was all on the same street, but when the interstate, they picked that particular area to go through and take an interstate through so they can go to Birmingham and get to Birmingham a lot quicker or faster, but they displaced a lot of people, and they moved them all over the places throughout the city, and that's how you begin to separate individuals, divide and conquer. And, you know, we got to understand that the answer may be right in front of us, but right now we're not able to see it because of some blinders that we have, because the blinders might be, I can get those things that I never had because the opportunities are there. Now, I want to kind of move from this topic to another topic if my team is ready to move to the next topic, because I want to make sure we talk about this. We're going to discuss the new Nike commercial, Just Do It, with Colin Kaepernick.
Well,
Let's talk about that. Share your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I posted this weekend right after the commercial aired on NFL. I was on the show, yeah, and I posted and I applauded it. Yes, I said in my post that it was a business decision by Nike. I'm hoping that other corporations will come out and be just as bold in their business decisions. Nike is a global corporation, global company, so folks burning sneakers here in America is really not going to affect it that much. And the fact is, you've already bought the sneakers, you bought the shoes. They've already gotten their investment off of you. So you're burning your own investment. But the bottom line is, I had never owned a pair of Nikes before, but I would have bought me some to show support because I think I did. I really did. I needed some new walking shoes anyway, so I went out and got me. They're, boy, those things are expensive. But I went out and got them, my very first pair. And I'm going to have mine blinged out, too. Get somebody to put some bling on them. But, but I guess I posted that I applauded because the fact that, first of all, we have to understand why Colin protested in the first place. Mm-hmm. Protests had nothing to do with the flag issue. The protest was about some of the things we just talked about tonight and a couple of weeks ago about the violence and about the shootings taking place in our neighborhoods and by those supposed to be protecting us. Well, we saw what happened just what a couple of days ago of this young man sitting in his own apartment, you know, and shot and killed. Why does this continue to happen? These types of things that he was trying to bring attention to. It was a soldier who would have told him about the kneeling. This was somebody that is an active military duty who would have told him about that and the significance of what that meant. That's when the kneeling started. It had nothing to do with the flag or disrespecting the flag. And this is America's First Amendment rights, expressions. If someone can call people by name and tweet those out across the globe, then this Colin can certainly express his feelings the way he wants to, just like I have the same right to do so myself and those of us on the phone. But that was the reason. And now that he's been shunned and banned pretty much by the owners in the NFL, but the fact that Nike put this out there front and center, it said to me that the message was clear. Live your dreams. Live your dreams. And even if those around you don't understand your dreams and can't get it, sometimes they can't get you either. Many of us have been there and done that. You know, sometimes they just didn't get us, you know, and they didn't get him. But live your dreams in spite of. Keep standing. Keep moving forward. That's the message I got from it. And I think it's a very positive one for young people in this country, for any of us who continue to move forward in our lives.
Awesome, awesome.
And I think it's critical. It's critical. This campaign speaks volumes. In terms of what he's trying to do, the message he's trying to send out, it speaks volumes because, one, we have a major corporation in the U.S. that supports this, and this is also the company that support other people, what, Shaquille O'Neal, Serena Williams, LeBron James. So why not support him? He's still continuing with the message, even though people said you can't come back to the NFL, silently said that.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
You know, what other alternative does he have but to keep pushing his dream and his agenda? you know, I agree. He had to do something. And the fact that Nike's supporting him, it's awesome.
Sure is.
Yes, because he sacrificed everything to get a voice out, to get his voice out there and to get have his message heard.
And one thing was proposed, and I watched a lot of First Take in the Morning with Stephen A. Smith, and he came up with a good point. He said Colin had come out here, he had stepped out. Even Eric Reed, he also was kind of blackballed, and now he had finally got him a job in the NFL back. But he said what would be good is all the NFL players, and I think that's what we're going to have to do. Colin has stepped out there. But all of those NFL players on Tuesday, now they're all of them are off on Tuesday except the team that's playing Thursday. The two teams are playing Thursday. Why don't you just go a mass, you know, walk to in unison toward the Capitol? And everybody said, well, we ain't done that before. But, you know, it's a different kind of walk when you have multimillionaires and you have some close to be billionaires out doing that walk. They have nothing to lose when they out in mass numbers. But at this point, it seemed like they had left Colin out there by himself and criticizing him for being silent. This wasn't all about running his mouth anyway. It was all about a silent protest. And people keep missing the point. We got to stop the violence in our community, especially when we have the people we pay to protect and serve that feel like they can just almost assassinate a black individual. In a situation with the police officer in the apartment, you know, we found out a little part of the story. Apparently, you know, she's in some kind of, and it's, we're talking about the same one that's black, the female that come in, the officer that shot in the
officer.
And it's a relationship. It's a relationship going on with them, too. Now, what's going on with that, I'm not saying anything that she was right to do that, but something going on that she has no right to take his life or anybody's life if she's not doing what she's supposed to do in her duty. I think it was an assassination. That's what that was. It's a total assassination of somebody she didn't want to know that she was involved with. So, but we have too many things going on like that, and when Colin decided to take that silent protest, you know, and his voice is being heard now over the world because Nike is a world product, and it provides for everybody, and everybody's talking about the commercial, Just Do It. So, you know, we're looking at a situation where, you know, we need to do some things. That's what we're trying to come up with, some things that we need to do together. You know, silent, either, you know, however it is, we're going to have to do something in our community to come save our community, if not save our culture. And we'll just share a few more things about that if you want to share some more thoughts about that.
Well, I just think that you're right. You're spot on that we're just going to have to take the bull by the horns and, again, become get back to being self-reliant, self-sufficient, and empowered, engaged. And just like I love Nike's branding, just do it. If we all just kept that inside of each of us, just do it. Do what is right. And as Martin Luther King says, it's always the right time to do what is right. Paraphrasing that, but it's always the time is always right to do what is right. And we know what is right. We know that. And there's something in each of us, deep down inside, that we have been given, that can bring out the best, and we just have to now just take it and just do it, and quit sitting back waiting for someone to do it for us. There is no one going to do it for us. We've got to do it.
That's
awesome. I agree.
300%. And you can join the conversation, too, 347-857-4192. All right, since we're talking about just having dreams and just doing it, let's look at some educational issues that we have. You know, it's just, it's, I, I, I wanted to look at this and see that because we moved to more like neighborhood schools, seeing like our neighborhood schools that are in African-American communities, where a lot of your inner city has been, you know, just changed, the population has changed because everybody or the majority of race has moved out in the suburbs. Our education institution in the black community is considered to be less effective or inefficient. What do y'all think about that? What do you think about our schools and our black communities being less effective in preparing our young people to be successful?
Well, I guess do teachers have an opportunity to teach those students to be effective?
Yes, sir.
I'm a school educator since I was 22 years old, and I believe in public school education. There are a lot of charter schools going up, as we know, because folks have deemed many of our public schools as insufficient, inferior, or whatever. There are a lot of great public schools in this country. The education is free. Your taxpayer dollars pay for this education. I'm an advocate and a proponent of public school education. There are some great schools. As a former principal of two public schools, we took what was deemed a low-income school and made it one of the best. One of the best.
That's great.
Hired 13 black males in an elementary school, which was unprecedented. I had more males in my school than they had in the entire district. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
In there for my beautiful young boys to see professionals at work, and they were gifted men to add to a multi-generational staff that didn't include all young Caucasian women. It was just a mixture of a lot of diversity. It worked. It took us 5 to 6 years to move a low-income school, and that's lightning speed in the educational terms, but we did. We moved that school. We moved those children, and we gave them, if nothing else, hope that they could be the very best they could be and move their families into different areas, be the first in their families to get a college education, all kinds of things. I could go on and on. So I know what can happen. No one told me that. I've lived it. Quality education, quality teaching is a must. Putting kids on computers all day long doesn't teach children.
Children.
You need to have a live body in that room that cares about kids, cares about our kids, cares about them, and even when they are disruptive, because I don't know a kid yet that's not, that has never been. Shoot, we were disruptive when we were young, you know. Every once in a while, you know, you just get out of turn. Your parents had to snatch you back. But the bottom line is you have to understand the development of a child. And when you do that, and you have caring adults, caring teachers, quality teachers who really can teach. And old school, I had a mixture of old school and young school, but it worked.
Mm-hmm.
It worked. It was hard work, and it was some of the most rewarding work I've ever done in my life, but it was worth it because it was all about the children, and that was my mantra. It's all about the children.
Sure.
And when you put that first, regardless of whatever else happened, that was the most important thing. And then we do have schools in this country where all of this takes place every single day in their public schools institutions. Right now you have someone at the federal level who's never even been a teacher, a public school employee. She's a very wealthy person that bought that position pretty much in support of 45. And they have dismantled a lot of educational programs. They're taking a lot of funding out of schools. And every time that a charter school goes up, the public school system it takes money away from the system. So, like I said, I've lived this, and I can tell you, parents just need to make sure they're involved, they're engaged, and when parents come in, did not know what kind of questions to ask. Sometimes I say, ask the teacher this. I would give them, the questions to ask. We would make sure that they were prepared and they were there. And the same way I said to parents, the same way you're here as your child at K-4 and K-5, kindergarten age, be there when they're seniors in high school and beyond. Don't stop coming. You've got to be involved. You must be engaged because it's engaged and involved. Like you said, sometimes a squeaky wheel gets the, the quote? But you know what I'm trying to
it's
say?
The oil.
Sometimes you have to be present. And when you're not present, it sends the idea that you don't care. And I know that's not the case. We do care. We care about our children, just like everybody else cares about theirs. But we have to be present in their lives from day one to show that and to do it and to be there.
Exactly. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Because when you're engaging the children and the parents, it makes a major difference because communication is across lines. People understand the mission and the goals that you're trying to accomplish. I think that's just the major thing of education.
Exactly.
I mean, public schools, I never gave them a thought growing up. Who would have thought?
Right.
And now we're in such a crisis in our school system, according to the media.
Mm-hmm.
According to the media. But we have to be on the level. When the school board meets, we meet. When there's local PTA meetings, et cetera, we have to be there as parents to understand what's being done in the academic community.
Absolutely. And it's so important that we play a part with this, as well as Ms. Black has said, she put many, many years, and I put many, many years before I retired. And, you know, it's sometimes I think about the opportunity that the public school gave to me and to put me in a position, give me an opportunity to succeed. And I think if we just revamp this situation, whether we in the African American predominant school or wherever we are, that we're going to put our young people in a position for success. You know, one of the things that National Department of Education rate states on is whether your education system gives our young people a chance for success. And some systems may not perform well in other areas, but they're performing pretty good in the teams doing that. And that's what it's all about. If you step into that classroom, you're a role model, and you're there to teach, you're to allow them the opportunity through the wisdom that you have to be successful. And that's what it should be all about. And we just said, instead of no child left behind and all these different phrases, the most important phrase is, do I come there every day, or am I putting this together so our young people can be successful? Because it's no longer a local competitive thing for young people or our individuals in the job market. It is a global, and we're losing the battle within the global. But we can continue to work and strive to be as good as we want to be, and our young people can succeed. So, you know, this could be a long story. We can continue to talk about it, and we would love to. You just call in 347-857-4192 and share your thoughts on it. Ms. Black has shared it so elegantly. Dr. Smith has done the same. So, you know, they shared their thoughts. But we're going to take a giant step and move to another topic in relationship. And we don't have about 8 minutes, less than that, but we want to kind of talk about this because I had it on the log to talk about. And it is, why do people fall in love with the past, that's P-A-S-T, and refuse to never let it go? Why do people fall in love with the past and refuse to let it go? They want to always hold on to what happened in the past in a relationship, a past relationship, that past individual, and they never want to let that person go. Tell me your thoughts on that.
This is a romantic relationship.
Yeah.
Clarify.
Pretty much. Uh-huh.
Usually, it's been Max. usually, it's comfortable. The past is something you know. It's comfortable. And it's hard to let something, to let go of something that you really know. That's why it's hard for me to kind of move on. But did you mean it romantically, or did you just mean it in just terms of any type of relationship?
Well, a romantic relationship where you was involved with somebody and y'all have broken up now and still you living in the past. Like people say, you can't move forward because you're still living in the past, and you can't, and every time you're in a new relationship, you bring about what happened in the past, you know. So it's sort of like, why can't you let that past relationship go so you can move forward? But some people refuse to let it go.
Well,
and again, you know, it's scary sometimes to move forward, because you're afraid of the unknown, and that's why history repeats itself, because you're comfortable in things that you do know. At least this is what, you know, I've been told.
Okay.
By folks who have had relationship issues. I am also a former licensed professional counselor before I became an administrator. So, in just talking with folks who confided in me over the years, that's one thing they've said, is just the fear. Can I make it out there by myself? Will someone else want me? Things of that nature. That they're afraid. They're afraid to move forward. And sometimes there might be a fear factor if it's an abusive romantic relationship. The fear of what would happen if I tried to leave. We won't have time for a story tonight, but I do have a story about something in that regard, about someone who was in an abusive relationship, and she did try to leave, and maybe we'll get a chance to talk about that the next time.
Okay.
Well, I don't think it's that the people fall in love with the past. They were in love all the time, and they were trying to move on and couldn't move forward and got stuck, you know, because as Ms. Black said, they are, you know, it's comfortable. They know that person. You don't know what's before you in the future and what's even there in the present, because you have a fear of moving forward. Some people, not all. Some people may have a fear of moving forward. And then, you know, it was just something about that person who was in my past relationship that I just don't want to give up. And it happens.
Mm-hmm.
It happens.
And sometimes you think that you'll be able to change that person, too.
Oh.
And that's one of the big things, that you can just change them and mold them into what you think you want that person to be. And if you just hang on long enough, that you'll get there. Well, we can't mold people into what we want them to be. We have to make sure that we are who we are and be ourselves and give the other person permission to also be themselves.
Yeah, because that's a lot of stress on current relationships when you're trying to mold and make the person into whom you want them to be. Who was the ideal mate, et cetera, for me, and what someone said it would look like for me. And the reality is it doesn't look that way. And maybe I'm in love with a dream, quote unquote, because this is not my reality.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Y'all hitting it on the head, and one of the key things that was said when we in a relationship, we think we can change those people, and then even if we end that relationship, we think that, okay, they had something positive. I don't know what's out there, the unknown that's been said, so I'm going to go back to that. But that just the one little problem they had, I think I can change. No one can change anybody.
No
that,
one can
that
change
person
you. Right.
Wants to be changed. If you don't want to
correct
be changed, it don't make no difference what you think. All you're doing is exhausting time and effort and becoming stressful with situations. And at times will steal your joy. I always was told never let anybody steal your joy. They didn't give it to you, and they darn sure can't take it away. But if you're exhausting all your time trying to make this person somebody that you want them to be, when they don't want to be that, then you have wasted a whole lot of valuable time. So now you live in, you may not so much live in the past, but what can happen is that it didn't work out, you might let that person go. But when you get to the next person, you think, I could have done that. So you're bringing some of the past things with you, not the person, but I know if I don't do this, then I see what problem you have, then I can change him. I couldn't change Johnny Boy, but I can, Becky Sue, but I can change Mary Ann or change Johnny Boy. I can change, but unless those people are willing to change, they're not going to change. Because some people are scarred pretty good. Sometimes they're scarred so bad that they just ain't ready for the change and don't want to change because they're comfortable with the way things are. So we bring some of those things that was done to us into the future, and now we can't live and be positive in a new relationship because we're still holding on to something that we couldn't control in no way. It might be change. It might be a financial situation. He might, I ain't going to let that person do this. I ain't going to let them handle my money. I ain't going to do that. That person was infidelity, and I'm going to do all, you know, sometimes you have to leave those things behind you. That's what we're talking about now. You can be a part of now. But we're close to the end of the show. The call in number is 347-857-4192. You know, the team is always jumping on top of it. They done an outstanding job tonight, but any other thoughts you want to leave before we close this show out in regards to that topic, then you, each one of you can close it out how you feel you're comfortable with closing it out and saying good night to everybody, then I'll close the whole show out.
Okay, well, on this particular topic, I've always, in fact, I've had strong women and men in my family, relationships in my family have taught me a lot growing up. And my mother always had this thing that she always says, if someone cannot help you rise, don't have them to help you sink. If someone can't help you rise,
right,
don't have them to help you sink. So I've always kind of lived by that. I always wanted to be around people, whether it was girlfriends or friends or whomever, in any type of relationship. You want people that's going to help you to achieve and push you to where you need to be and help you get there. And if they can't, you got to cut them loose. You got to cut it. And sometimes it's very painful, and I've had to do that in my life. And those are pains that leave wounds. But it's made me stronger. So I'll leave you with that. And then just to say that tonight, today, September 10th, every year, is World Suicide Prevention Day. And the date occurred on a Monday. And I did a post tonight on my Facebook site that talked about to recognize the warning signs and causes. Suicide's on the rise, and particularly as we go through these opioid epidemics, and that we have so many people who are distressed and just hurting. So just be aware of that, and just reach out to someone. Sometimes this person just needs someone to talk to, and you may never, but just kind of know some of the warning signs. But if you don't see them or even be aware of them, sometimes just be there for another person and reach out. But this is about bringing awareness to suicide prevention in our country and our society. So this is today is World Suicide Prevention Day. And, of course, tomorrow is the 17th recognition of 9/11. So that's tomorrow. That'll be 17 years since that happened. And so, again, I'm so glad that of all the calls that folks have tuned in tonight, Dr. Smith, again, thank you for the opportunity. And, again, the only father, daughter, radio blog on talk radio is phenomenal. And I like the way you keep it real. And thank you for allowing Dr. Smith and I to be a part of this and also help keep it real.
Awesome.
All right. Well, I'm going to close out with saying we really had a good conversation tonight, and it was very good. It was uplifting for me. And I just, want to reiterate the Nike information. Just do it, because sometimes we have to do it, and we have to sacrifice. Even if it means losing everything that I favored or thought so highly of having a career, a life, etc. The other thing is when we talk about relationships and we talk about the end, the beginning, something my mother always said is it's better to be asked up than asked out. And what that meant for her was if people will ask you up front, you can make a decision to participate. It's better they ask you up front than to ask you out of their lives. So with that being said, I hope that that encourages someone and that, people will call into the show. We appreciate you listening, and we look forward to speaking with you again in 2 weeks.
Awesome, awesome. I tell you, we had a great show tonight. You know, we just talking about Nike, just do it, living your dream. We're living a dream here on Talking Real to You. Something that was dreamed last year, and we just really thank God for having given us this opportunity. I thank my co-host, who's not able to be here, but I know she's listening. I thank my guest expert, Dr. Smith. Ms. Black, it's just awesome. We're going to keep on doing it right every other Monday. And I always tell everybody the hashtag is keep on grinding. Hashtag is Smith Way. Hashtag communicate far. Number four, understanding. And you know what? I always tell everybody, just God will do some great things for you. You got to believe and trust in him. Not only just do it, he will do it for you. And I always say, I love you. And it ain't a good thing you can do about it. Have a great night, and we'll see you on 2 weeks now, but also on Wednesday night with Talking Sports Plus and Friday following the Dodgers. Have a great night.
The
my downfall turned out to be the greatest victory of my life. Cause when it comes at your best and hard, there's only one that can come and make it right. So ain't no need for stressing and crying, cause he was so out just like he did the last time. And the last time, and the last time, I know, I know, I know.
So I trust the man all time.